Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome back to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and joining me is Pat Brady, the former state Republican chairman, now with Next Generation Strategies. And we're going to start out by talking a little bit about some of the issues surrounding the Trump administration these days. And we know where you are when it comes to Donald Trump. But before we begin, I wanted to play, I had played earlier a couple of cuts involving Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake, now saying he's not running for re-election. There was also Tennessee Republican Senator Bob Corker expressing his concerns. And despite this apparent rancor, Trump visited with Senate Republicans on Capitol Hill last week, and the president, with the Marine One standing by in the background, well, he says that the Senate Republicans are united.
We have great unity. If you look at what happened yesterday at the meeting, we had, I guess, virtually every senator, including John McCain. We had a great conversation yesterday, John McCain and myself, about the military. I think we had I called it a love fest. It was almost a love fest. Maybe it was a love fest. But we get standing ovations. There is great unity. I mean, if you look at the Democrats with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, that's a mess. There's great unity in the Republican Party.
Now, asked specifically about Jeff Flake's criticisms of him, President Trump says that he believes that Flake made the right decision by not seeking re-election.
He was against me from before he ever knew me. He wrote a book about me before I ever met him, before I ever heard his name. His poll numbers in Arizona are so low that he couldn't win. And I don't blame him for leaving. I think he did the right thing for himself. But if you know, long before he ever knew me, during the campaign, even before the campaign, I mean, he came out with his horrible book. And I said, who is this guy? In fact, I remembered the first time I saw him on television, I had not really been, nobody knew me in terms of politics. But the first time I saw him on television, I said, I assume he's a Democrat. Is he a Democrat? They said, he's a Republican. I said, that's impossible. So look, his poll numbers are terrible. He's done terribly for the great people of Arizona, a state that likes Donald Trump very much, as you, even you will admit. And he would have never won. In fact, even in the primary, he's way down in the primary. So he did the smart thing for himself. This way he can get out somewhat gracefully. But
That's the president responding to some very loud concerns expressed by Bob Corker and Jeff Flake. Is this any kind of a, Pat Brady, is this any kind of a turning point going on?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. I kind of thought so, and then it died down quickly in the news cycle, and it doesn't seem to be. And as the president has said all along, he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, and his supporters would stay with him. A couple things in that statement he made about Senator Flake. I do agree the Democrats have their own problems, and the Bernie wing of the party versus the rest of the party. It's just more visible because the Republicans have the president and
they have control.
And they have control, and that's why we see more of it. But I when he gets up and makes these statements like that about Jeff Flake and says, I thought he was a Democrat, Jeff Flake's been one of the most conservative members
Correct.
Of the Senate, even when he was in the House of Representatives. I mean, he's from Arizona, which is a pretty conservative state. But this is where the president can't help himself. He couldn't just say, hey, congratulations, we didn't agree, but I wish him the best of luck. He's got to take these personal pot shots, like Bob Corker was talking about. And I think it was interesting, we were talking to Fred Hochberg at the Export-Import Bank. There's a lack of stability at the top from the president. Not only hurts us Republicans politically, it hurts the nation. We're talking about there's no stability. We don't have these trade deals. It hurts the financial markets. People aren't sure what's going on in this country, either politically or economically, and it creates problems. And what we've
but the president will point to the Dow and
he can continue to do that. That's probably not the right way to look at it. But from a political point of view, he has no legislative accomplishments in 10 months to speak of, other than the deal he cut with the Democrats to raise the debt ceiling. So he likes to talk this game. There was a great article last week written by Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal. She said, incompetence has no base. I mean, if you're and she used Sarah Palin as an example, and Sarah Palin had these astronomical poll numbers and all these Facebook followers until people realized that she was fairly incompetent. And I think slowly we're going to see that with the president. Everybody kind of reaches their tipping point. But a long answer to your question. With this guy, you never know. I thought there were 10 or 15 tipping points during the campaign in the course of his presidency. But the bottom line for me, nothing's getting done. And the things he ran on, the tax reform, replace or repeal Obamacare, any of the things he ran on just aren't getting done.
Well, we have a budget.
We do have a budget, but the next hard thing is going to be fitting that into the tax reform plan.
Exactly. And there seems to be, you know, a lot of concerns about, particularly, even though I haven't necessarily heard it expressed from the top of Illinois government, but certainly in talking to friends in various industries about such things in tax reform as losing the state and local tax deduction.
There are a lot of two or three, maybe four or five tipping points in what's been proposed that will kill the deal, and that might be one of them. But we as conservative Republicans should insist that whatever it is revenue neutral. We don't go run up any more deficits and debt. But it doesn't seem to be where we are right now.
Well, and
you never hear the president talk about it.
As far as
we got to do have a balanced budget. I rarely hear him talk about that.
No, and I think some of the scoring that's gone on shows that this would at least $1.2 trillion out of balance in the latest.
What are we now at, $20 trillion?
I believe so.
It's just we need to get to 5-10 years ago. That's what we talked about as conservatives. We needed to take care of the people of our country, but also spend more than we take in. But I don't think I've ever heard the president talk about that.
Also in the news that broke late Friday, and it's now been confirmed by multiple sources, is that the special counsel, Robert Mueller, will be an indictment of some kind issued by grand jury on Monday. We don't know who it is. We don't know what it's about. We don't know a lot of things about this, except that it's confirmed that it's going to happen. You're a former federal prosecutor involved in white-collar crime.
Spent a lot of time in that grand jury in D.C. back in the old days.
Not sitting.
No, as a prosecutor, yes.
But this could tell us where things might be headed.
Yeah, the first point is we don't know anything. This may be a very...
Right, and I don't want to make this a head-of-our-skis kind of conversation here.
It could be Manafort. It could be a real minor figure. Typically, in a white-collar case like this, one of the ways you do it is you start at the bottom, you peel people off, try to get them to cooperate and move up.
Yeah, what I call ladder climbing.
Exactly.
And to try to squeeze people.
Exactly. And a couple of things. The prosecutor that's doing this case, I was reading yesterday, is known for indicting family members. He did that in Enron to get them to cooperate. And there's some family members on both of these potential indictees tomorrow that have family members that are at least somewhat involved. But a couple things. If we look at this indictment, they'll probably have an arraignment. Somebody will come into court and be formally charged tomorrow. They'll release the indictment, and the indictment will tell us where it's going. Is this something that relates to Trump and the campaign closely? Is it somewhere in that circle
sphere of
facts? Or is it just something else that somebody was doing, some money laundering scheme, some improper contact with foreign officials or whatever? So we'll know a lot about where the case is going or where the prosecutor is going after we read this indictment. But right now, we don't know anything.
Well, but, I mean, will it tell us where it's going? Because there is such a great sphere of examination that the special counsel can do, it doesn't necessarily have to be anything with the alleged Russia collusion.
Exactly. It'll give us, it won't tell us exactly where it's going.
I mean, it could be a regulatory violation.
Exactly. That's the second circle. It's not in the Russia collusion case. And we may not know anything. It may just be an inconsequential, but not one of the major players. We won't know anything until we read the indictment. But I would imagine, from what I've read and heard reported, the lawyers were told to bring their clients to the courthouse, which means they're reporting to be arrested, and then they'll be arraigned, which is another word for formally charged.
So we'll stay tuned for Monday's activity.
But it's interesting, the political side of it. The president all week was trying to say, divert attention to Hillary Clinton and the uranium deal and dossier and all that, and then say that this investigation is pretty much over. The one thing I would differ on that, I think this is just the beginning. this series of indictments. I don't think this means it's the end of anything. I still think the collusion thing is a stretch, but I don't think I think this is just starting.
Well, yeah, and that's from watching these kinds of investigations before, that this is the very preliminary step.
You know, one of the fascinating things about it is this a test to see if the president will use his pardon powers, if it's one of the people close to him, and then are they going to have to go up to the grand jury in New York and indict these people on state charges where the president can't pardon them?
Well, and I was remarking just a few minutes ago that we hadn't heard from the president this morning on Twitter, which is kind of what you normally hear. And just while we were talking, he's tweeting about, as usual, the Obamacare premiums will be up. The Dems own it, but we will repeal and replace and have great health care soon after tax cuts.
Yeah, when he does that, talk about stability and no grand strategic plan, that really sets up Congress, if they don't get it, maybe he just sets them up to try to set them up to fail and make them look bad so he has a scapegoat. But I don't know why he'd put that out right now. He never seems to be able to focus on one thing, and right now it's tax reform, which to me, if they can get that done, we might have a decent midterm.
Yeah, and there's already, you know, people saying if that doesn't happen,
it's a problem. Because what are you going to point to? You haven't got anything done. You ran on repeal and replace of Obamacare. And I thought we would control the House of Representatives, Republicans, for the next 20 years, and it's in play now. If you talk to the people in D.C., they're very pessimistic about what's going to happen in 18, and maybe, you know, the Senate, too, but we'll wait and see. Maybe they can get something done.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio with Pat Brady, former state Republican chairman with Next Generation Strategies. And Pat, I want to shift over to state politics and a number of things going on. Yesterday, Republican State Representative Jeannie Ives, a three-term Republican lawmaker from Wheaton, said she is out passing petitions to challenge Republican Governor Bruce Rauner in the March 20th primary. Stopped short of saying that she's actually running till she gets the signatures, she says.
Which is an odd way to start, but we can talk about that later.
Well, but yes, but nevertheless, I still think, one, some people are surprised it got this far. We know about the discontent that exists in the party among rank-and-file Republican lawmakers, the discontent over his signing of what's known as House Bill 40, which expanded taxpayer-subsidized abortions for women under Medicaid and also state employee health insurance. And that has created some divisions among social conservatives in the Republican ranks. But I'm not sure anybody expected that somebody was actually going to, despite the talk, actually go and challenge him.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think by doing this, Jeannie Ives is basically Mike Madigan's favorite Republican. The reality is, for Republicans to win in this state, we need to be unified. We need to spend every nickel towards beating the Democratic nominee. And it's difficult in a blue state. Now, Jeannie Ives, as a party chairman, we welcome primaries and we like that. But the reality is, a hardcore far-right social conservative with $32,000 in her campaign war chest is not going to beat their likely nominee, J.B. Pritzker, who can spend a couple hundred million on this race. So if she were somehow to win and beat Governor Rauner in the primary, she'd have virtually no chance of winning. It's not like there's a broad group of Republicans that are behind Jeannie Ives. She's kind of out on a little bit on an island, and they're going to rally around her and write her checks for tens of millions of dollars. It's just not going to happen. So Mike Madigan's got to be pretty happy with the fact that Jeannie Ives is putting her petitions out. But there's a kind of another story to this. There's a group, this Illinois Policy Institute group, run by Dan Proft and the far-right social agenda litmus
test.
Well,
Dan Proft is associated with it. It's John Tillman.
Well, it's John Michael Tillman, but it's all the same people, Pat Hughes, and all these people that want litmus test Republicans. They don't want, what they want to do is stir it up in the primaries, and they never look beyond to the general election. They put up candidates that won't ever win general elections. They have a terrible record of success in putting candidates in that actually win. Like when Proft ran for governor, he got 7%. His buddy Pat Hughes, similar to Jeannie Ives, ran as the social conservative against Mark Kirk. He got 19%. So we have this part of the party, and I respect their views. We want social conservatives in the party, but they're litmus test Republicans that don't care about the economic issue so much. They just want these people that are perfectly aligned with them, that are pro-life, anti-gay marriage, the far right of the party, and Proft and the Policy Institute and Representative Ives. These people represent that, and they I don't think they see the big picture of what we need to do to win in the state. So, again, Mike Madigan couldn't be happier that Jeannie Ives is circulating her petitions and couldn't be happier that Dan Proft puts these candidates in these House races that they rarely win, and if they do, they never win a general election. So,
but this has been a decades-long issue in the state Republican Party of as far as the moderate versus conservative wing of the party. But there's no doubt that Republican politics has gotten more conservative.
Well, they have. They've gotten more. They've gotten to the point where they just are complete. They won't agree to anything, and they don't like anything that isn't right, and that lines up perfectly with their political agenda. But the reality is, we live in Illinois, and you have to be. I'm not saying you have to compromise your principles, but you have to be a little more moderate to win. We need to have some common sense and look long-term strategically, not these petty primary wars. And with Jeannie Ives, and she's free to do it, I don't think she has a whole lot of support beyond her Milton Township group there. And I'm not sure how much support she has within her own caucus. And to run this, to just upset the apple cart, and even if she did, like I said before, if she put $1 million in the bank, she's not going to match J.B. Pritzker's $100 million. So this is Republicans, and again, I'm not criticizing her for doing it. She's free to do it, and I'm happy for her, but I want to win. I don't want to have a debating society. If we do not win this cycle, if Bruce Rauner does not win this cycle, I don't know what the future of the party is, because Mike Madigan will have the keys to the kingdom with his handpicked guy in the governor's office. And as a Republican, that's a scary proposition.
And this is a map.
It's another map year. So for people that don't get this every 10 years or don't tune in that much, every 10 years the legislature gets to draw the legislative map. So basically they get to pick who's going to vote for him. And Speaker Madigan, to his credit, is a genius with this. And this will be the second straight cycle that he has no opposition in drawing the map. So we can kiss the party goodbye for another 10 years, because he'll draw a map that he can continue to keep control.
Well, very quickly, so we now have Pat Quinn has entered the Democratic primary for Attorney General. Lisa Madigan not seeking a fifth term. Erica Harold is the leading Republican candidate for the nomination there. But now we have I believe 8-person field on the Democratic side.
I think
side.
Leader Durkenjunkt, every Democrat with a law degree is in.
Well, I think there's still probably more to come. Then,
yeah, exactly.
But that having been said, I think there's a school of thought that if you're a Republican in these times, which are somewhat tumultuous for Republicans, having Pat Quinn back in the game isn't a bad thing if you're a Republican.
It's great. I'm sure our Harvard-educated attorney general nominee-to-be, although Joe McMahon's talking about running too, but I think either of them would be thrilled to have Pat Quinn back, as it reminds us of the old days and the thing that why Bruce Rauner won by 5 points in a blue state.
Well, as I wrote, that it allows him basically, not that he isn't already recycling the material, but for Governor Rauner, just having the prospect of Pat Quinn on the ticket, you'd recycle all the 2014 stuff.
Oh, yeah.
All the linkage.
Remember the Harold Washington YouTube that came out in 2010?
Yes.
There's a lot to work with there, but I guess from the Democrat, just from an objective political side, with that name ID and he's been governor, I would imagine he's the front runner as this rolls out right now.
Well, and especially when you're talking about a field of 8 candidates. It does not take that
22% much. 22% to win, or 20%, something like that?
Probably 18%, 17% at that point. I mean, a plurality is not that significant.
But as we were talking off air, I was watching the Notre Dame game yesterday, and there were four. That commercial that Governor Rauner did this week, with the governors thanking Mike Madigan for sending the jobs out to their states, that was on 4 times yesterday. So it's game on.
We know what the message is.
We know what the message is.
That's Pat Brady, former state Republican chairman, and now with Next Generation Strategies. Pat, thanks so much for joining me in studio.
Always fun, Rick. Thanks.
We'll be back with more right after this.
It used to be business etiquette. You just didn't talk about what you made.